Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, and this week we are covering a very special episode of Season 1, one which many people have loved throughout the years. This week it's all about ice. But before we get there, allow me to introduce my guest for the first time on the X-Cast. It's one of my very best pals in the world, Mr. Matt Latham.
Thank you for having me, Tony.
It's an absolute pleasure.
I've been really looking forward to being on this. I've ruined every other one of your podcasts I've been on so far. So
yeah, this is another one down. I'm sure there will be plenty more in the future that you can destroy.
My Twitter bio still has the best / worst thing on Black Hole Cinema on it.
That's an apt moniker. So, yes, we are covering ice. But before we get to that, now I've introduced Latham, I'm going to ask you the five questions of X, although I'm going to adapt it this week, and we're going to do the four questions of X for reasons that will become very apparent very quickly, because Mr. Matt has only just begun his voyage into the X-Files, but I will let him explain this a little bit more when I ask you the first question, Matt, which is, when did you discover the X-Files?
Quite long ago, actually.
No. It's not the answer you were supposed to give.
No, because you'll know the answer to this, but many years ago, when I think season one was
many years ago in the mists of time. Sorry.
Yes, many years ago in the mists of time. I think my mum used to work, I think, part time, and my dad would pick her up from where she was, and she finished work about 10, half 10. And at the time, me and my sister, we were not of leaving of the house age. And I always remember my dad, I think, was watching it on BBC Two. And I remember the first episode I actually watched, I think, was the week after the end of the one episode I saw, which was, I can't remember the episode, even though I watched it a few weeks ago.
Try and describe it.
It's the image that burnt in my brain that I still remember is just seeing the guy just being zapped by lightning floating in air. The one before Eve. Because Eve was the next episode.
Oh, yes, Fallen Angel.
That's it, Fallen Angel. Yeah. But then the next week, I think I sat and watched all of Eve. And I still remember loads of it because thinking it was a mystery show, I remember watching it, writing notes, trying to work out the plot and the mystery. I was expecting some kind of real mystery, so I was making all these notes about Eve's sixes.
That's
and
cool.
Eve 9. And I can still remember making those notes. And I can't find them for the life of me. I must have thrown them out.
Oh, it's a shame.
But it was probably just very badly scribbled stuff. But I remember watching that, and I can't recall watching any others. And when I was at school, when I was at secondary school, one of my English teacher for year 7, before he left when I was in year 9, he used to have something called the X Club, where during lunch times, I think twice a week, they'll watch sci-fi episodes of something sci-fi. So like one week you might have an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like an episode of Star Trek, and I'm pretty sure it's my English teacher's fault that my favourite Star Trek is Voyager.
Well, let's not get onto this.
I am a stalwart defender of Voyager. Yeah, I kind of blame my English teacher for getting me into Voyager, but he'll occasionally throw in the odd episode of The X-Files, because I remember, I think, other one week we watched, I think it was a two-part, or like one of those videos that where they edited two episodes together, and I think it was Emily.
I think season 5, Christmas Carol and Eric.
Yeah, Emily. Yeah, and I think, because I can remember watching
Not the best.
But, and a few others. I can remember watching Bad Blood for the first time.
Oh.
During one of those as well. And I think occasionally I'll just catch odd episodes. I remember watching the film. I think my dad lent the VHS from the video shop in my local town the one time, and I remember watching the film and didn't understand a bloody thing in it.
Well, you wouldn't. I mean, no. But then you really need to watch the show.
Yeah, and I've seen bits and pieces of different episodes throughout the seasons. I think I've watched quite a few of season 9, but I can't remember much. I've seen the truth. I've seen all of the truth more than once as well, and there are just bits, but I've never sat down and I've never watched a complete season all the way through. I've never watched it all the way from start to finish. Until now. I'm about 18 episodes into season 1, and I'm going at a very slow, leisurely pace. So it's because Tony's I think on he's pretty much expecting on a Sunday. Sunday's usually where I end up watching about two or three episodes, and his phone will suddenly start buzzing,
yeah,
and getting text messages of my reaction to stuff. And I think there was definitely. He got a lot of texts when I was watching Ice, anyway.
Yes, good
text. It was basically a lot of swear words going, fucking great. This is brilliant. One thing I do remember as well is that my dad used to drop me off at school, I think between year 7 and 8. He used to drop me off into the centre of the town I live in to get the coach to school. And it was only a 5-minute drive. But we used to listen to Heart FM, and about 7:45, they'd always play this like 2-minute radio show, and it was called The X-Files. And what it was, right, was like a spoof radio show of the X-Files. And it was it was like you'd have a story played over 5 days. So you'd have one, it was like an old radio serial. But it was absolutely hilarious. And I was trying to find information on it. And it's there's not much information at all. There was a website that had the episodes. And quite a few of the episodes are actually edited together into 10-minute chunks on YouTube. But it's like where you've got the characters of Fox Mulder and Donut Sulky investigating stuff, like the voiceover artists for the show going missing. So there's a lot of meta stuff where Mulder and Sulky are trying to do their own voiceovers and that kind of stuff. You've got the assistant director Skinhead, who one of the ongoing jokes is the fact he walks in and every character comments on the fact he's a crossdresser. He's like, nice high heels, sir. And he's the most best Mitch Pileggi impersonation ever. He goes, thank you, Mulder, the chiffon. They've got a villain called Dancer Man, who's like a tap dancer, and a mysterious informant called Sore Throat. and trust me, Tony, once you finish this, you need to go on YouTube and listen to a couple of episodes.
I will do, yeah.
They're hilarious. It's just that there's a lot of meta self-awareness humour, and you... Knowing me, you know how much, yes, I like that kind of humour.
You're a big fan of that.
Yeah. And it annoys me that there's not much information on the internet. I think the fact that it exists is an X-File in itself. in fact, if any of the X-Files fan base who listen to this, I'm assuming there's a... You've told me there's some people throughout the world that listen to this.
Yeah.
So hopefully some people might be able to help me or... the show in trying to find more information on the X-Files, because there's no information online at all about who created it, who wrote it, who even starred in it.
Well, you never know, they might be listening.
So yeah, the truth might be out there.
Yeah. If you did create or star in the X-Files, let us know. That's good. That's interesting fandom, considering you've not seen that much of the show, which leads me on to my next question.
Actually, I think that's probably a testament to the power of the pop culture of the show, more... how much I seem to know about it whilst watching it out of order.
Yeah, yeah. You've picked up by osmosis, really. So the next question is, based on where you're up to, what would you say your favourite episode of The X-Files is? So you're on what episode now? Episode 17, 18, 19?
The last one I watched was Miracle Man.
Season 1, episode 18.
Yeah, so I watched EBE and Miracle Man in one go yesterday.
Right.
So, favourite episode at the moment, it's a toss-up between Ice and Beyond the Sea. Mm. I'm probably leaning towards Ice more than Beyond the Sea, because I think it's still the best episode I've seen so far.
Park your thoughts on that. Okay, we're about to get there then.
Okay,
question 3. What would you say your favourite character on The X-Files is so far? Obviously, again, you know, you're only up to episode 18, but it doesn't necessarily even have to be Mulder or Scully. This could be anyone who's cropped up before.
Well, the only other guest characters have been Deep Throat, and I've only seen one episode of The Lone Gunman, so it won't be them. As interesting as Deep Throat is, at the moment, what I've noticed is that I quite like Mulder, but that's mainly because he's a lot more central in here, and Scully's naturally... feels like a backseat in some of the episodes, even though I've noticed the better episodes have more Scully in them.
Mm.
But so far, I think it is Mulder, because I think of how much we've seen of him so far and how multifaceted and multi-layered he's become in a very short amount of time. I think I've got 18 episodes in, and there's loads of different layers, and he's grown three-dimensional very quickly, which is quite surprising considering I was expecting a show that is very... isolated and standalone for most of the time. Is that you've got clear progression throughout, in a show that is the early 90s. Which...
Well, there's one thing with the X-Files in that, yes, there's a lot of standalone episodes, and the way that they structure their arcs is not like serialized television. But at the same time, one thing that quickly happened in the show, especially in season two, was that the characters became what people were watching for, as opposed to the actual stories often. And when people look back now on the original series, they are more fond of the standalone stories now for the actual story. But back in the day when this was happening, everyone really wanted to get to know Mulder and Scully. And at the beginning, Chris Carter didn't necessarily intend for that completely. There were the overall arcs, obviously, that were like with Mulder's sister and things like that. But I think he intended it much more to be two FBI agents investigating things in much more of a standalone manner. And then as time went on and people grew to love these characters and the actors and everything, it started to become even more character-centric. So that's what you're finding, I think, is that already mm-hmm. they're starting to cotton on to the fact that they've got two really, really great characters, perfectly cast, and people want more of them, really.
Yeah, and I think and I've noticed the better episodes in season one so far have had a better balance between the two of them. I think, I won't go into too much details yet, but Ice is probably the first real example of getting that balance right.
Yes. Well, yeah, I would agree there. Yeah. Finally then, for the fourth and last question of this truncated five questions of X, what would you say your favourite moment of the show has been so far from where you're
at?
To?
I can't answer that yet, because we'll come to it in a...
it's see. Nice.
It's in ice.
Okay, right, part that then. Okay, that's thanks for that. That's some really, really good insights there for your burgeoning X fandom as you're working your way through the seasons.
And I'm pretty sure, and all the text messages I have yet to send to Tony, all the reactions.
All to come. Yes. And it'll be interesting to get you on at various points throughout doing the X-Cast, because obviously, you know, you're going to get to the end of this show before we finish recording this. So it'll be interesting to see your opinions as we go further.
Yes, it will be. I'm deliberately trying not to rush through them. Yeah. So, and it's slightly annoying, but I am binge watching another show. So that's my...
Well, you watch all the TV in the world, so I understand. Okay, so let's get to the meat of this. We're going to talk about the eighth episode of The X-Files, Ice.
This team of scientists made up the Arctic Ice Core Project. They were sent to Alaska by the government's Advanced Research Project Agency nearly a year ago to drill into the Arctic ice. The samples they removed contained trapped gases, dust, chemicals. Evidence that could reveal the structure of the Earth's climate back to the dawn of man. Their work was a success, nearly completed. No reports or indications of problems of any kind. Until only a week later, this next transmission.
We're not who we are. We're not who we are. It goes no further than this. It stops right here, right now.
What happened up there?
So far, nobody's been able to reach the compound because of bad weather. Obviously, they think we're either brilliant or expendable because we've pulled the assignment.
Is it severe isolation distress?
These were top geophysicists. They were trained and screened for this project in every way imaginable, including psychological makeup. We leave for Nome today. We'll meet up with three scientists familiar with the Ice Core Project and then head north up to the icy cape. The National Weather Service reports a three-day window to get in and out before the next Arctic storm. Bring your mittens.
Ice is the eighth episode of the first season of The X-Files. It first aired on November the 5th, 1993, and was written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, directed by David Nutter. In an Arctic research station, Mulder and Scully are threatened by what appear to be primordial ice worms that cause their hosts to become dangerously paranoid and violently murderous. So, Matt, out of 10, what would you give ice?
It's quite difficult at the moment to, because I don't like trying to grade episodes, particularly when I haven't seen the whole thing, because I could, my gut reaction is to say this is a 10, because it's one of the probably the best episodes of sci-fi I've seen.
Okay.
As I've not seen all the episodes, it might not be one of the best episodes of The X-Files.
It is.
it is, okay.
I would say it is, but yeah, that's, I understand what you're saying, yeah.
But it is easily the best episode I've seen since I've started, a couple of months ago anyway.
I think Ice would definitely be in my top 25, and you're talking 200 odd episodes. Ice would definitely be in my top quarter, I think. I mean, I would give it a 9, shading a 9.5, Ice, really, because it just, it's the second episode of the show, or it's the first episode of the show for me at this point to get everything right. Squeeze almost gets everything right, and again, that was written by Morgan and Wong, but Ice is the first one that truly, in terms of the concept, completely sells me, in terms of the characterization sells me, in terms of the drama, in terms of the idea, the script, just everything. It's just almost perfect.
Well, it's the best episode I've seen so far.
Yeah.
And it'd be tough to beat it, to be honest, even though you've hinted that it might be beaten.
Oh, it is beaten, yeah.
In season one?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Is it by episodes I've not watched yet?
Well, I mean, I would probably say that Beyond the Sea is better. Just by a shade.
I'd say it was just a close second behind this.
Okay, I mean, there's not much in them. I mean, they're very, very different episodes, but there's not much in them. For me, and I think we talked about this, for me, the finale is the best episode of season one, for loads of reasons, and a lot of it is my own. It was the first one I ever watched, the first X-File I ever watched, The Erlenmeyer Flask. So there's a lot of nostalgia for me.
I think that's probably why I probably liked Eve when I rewatched it.
Yes,
I
exactly. Liked Eve,
but
yeah.
That's probably because of the it was the first one I watched when I was about
the
8.
Nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would argue The Erlenmeyer Flask is a really, really, really good episode. It's one of the best things Chris Carter has ever written, because he can be hit and miss sometimes, especially with mythology, which it is. But yes, Ice is definitely one of the best, certainly in season one, and I would argue throughout the entire show. So let's get into it then. So the story begins in the Arctic Ice Core project, Icy Cape, Alaska, 250 miles north of the Arctic Circle, as the legend tells us. And it really kicks off with lots of... It's one of the darkest teasers we've had yet in the entire show.
Literally, I had to turn the brightness up on my TV.
Yeah, just really unnerving. As the, you know, you've got the camera tracking through the devastation in the base. You know, you've got Mark Snow's really sort of creepy, brooding score all the way through. You know, he's an interesting. I mean, I'm well into music and composers, and he's interesting, Mark Snow, because sometimes he will score episodes quite synthetically and blandly, but then occasionally he really, really finds a theme to run through an episode, and he does that with Ice, and it really, really works all the way through, and it just fills you with dread. The whole thing fills you with loads of dread, doesn't it?
It's very well shot.
Yeah.
It's very well shot. I think when I first watched it, I think, because the moment when you suddenly see the second guy that's there,
yeah.
You don't see him coming. It's just like...
Well, exactly. Yeah. I think the set design's really good as well. The way they frame everything, the lighting as well, as you say. It just all comes together to be this really scary concoction and throws you right into the middle of something that's completely gone wrong. It's like, Jesus Christ, what has happened here? Mm-hmm. And then you get the great catchphrase, "We're not who we are." That was my impression of the guy.
Yeah,
it goes no further than this.
Yeah, no further. But I think "we're not who we are," that's just a great line, isn't it? Really, mm-hmm. it's full of meaning, and I think it's just a good way of getting across the idea that these guys aren't quite in control of their actions. And you see that with that long truncated. I mean, David Nutter's a great director of TV. Anyway,
oh my God, he's directed loads. He's the go-to person for pilots as well.
He is, yeah. I mean, he directed the Millennium pilot a few years later, and he's just directed some of the best episodes of TV really out there. If you look at his resume, he's a cut above all the directors really we've had so far, which is probably why Ice looks the best episode yet, because he's just got that extra flair really.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way he shoots this, and the way you've got that really drawn out moment where the two guys are facing each other and then they steadily put their guns to each other's heads, to their own heads, it's just, and then you've got Mark Snow's music, it's just really, really scary in a way that the teasers haven't been yet in the show.
Yeah, exactly. It's I think it's kind of pitch perfect in terms of how it's done.
Yeah, it really, really sets it up well. So obviously the gunshots go off and you cut to the light going out, or the light flickering in the base and then going out, which is a really symbolic way of going, right, well, whatever's happened has happened, really. So then we've got the credits, and after that, we enter with Mulder and Scully looking at the transmissions. I really like this, because this is something that fills me with a bit of a chill, where you watch the two transmissions and you've got the one of the whole base going, yeah, we're here, woo, and they're all happy, and
yeah.
And then you cut to the guy, go, shh, and then he's like, we're not who we are. It's just really gives you a shiver.
Yeah, it's also noticed, and it's one of the things I probably noticed when I've been watching it, is like, it is very 90s. I mean, they're watching it on a VHS.
Yeah.
I think in a couple of episodes of time, you have people trying to splice up and try and use analog technology to determine how far a airplane was from the ground and stuff. And it's,
yeah.
But like, there's a very, it's a bit dated, but it's quite of its time, and it's got kind of a certain charm to it in terms of how, in that it's like unashamedly 90s. And also, pointing out, on that crew, there's a black guy. Do you think he was the first person to get killed? Because it's the 90s.
Yeah.
It's the 90s, and that kind of stuff happens in The Walking Dead still, so...
Oh,
I don't know.
If we'd have seen them die, then
yeah.
Almost certainly. Obviously, this episode was heavily borrowing from The Thing, which was the John Carpenter film from 1982, which, interestingly enough, it was based on a book called Who Goes There? By an author called John W. Campbell, and one of the guys at the very beginning who kills himself is named Campbell. So I think there was a homage there to that guy. And it's just, I mean, if you've ever, have you seen The Thing?
No.
Are you familiar? Well, that's no surprise.
Yeah.
are you familiar with The Thing?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a seminal horror film from the early 80s, which just, it's the same premise, really. A group of people go to a base, they get slaughtered by a creature from another world. And it's a lot more overtly horror, but it's the same idea, really. I mean, it's a complete nick. This really is, in many respects. It's just the alien, whatever it is different in this case. They denied it was a Thing ripoff, though, Morgan and Wong. They're like, it's just because we set it in the Arctic doesn't mean it's a Thing ripoff. Well, it kind of does.
yeah, it is. Come on,
it is. Guys, let's be honest. Just going back to something you said, though, it was interesting you say that it's very 90s. As somebody who didn't watch this in the 90s, and you're watching it now, does that get in the way? Because it is. You are right. It is very 90s. Not just this episode, but certainly the early seasons. Certainly the first season.
Not really, because it's quite. It's nice to actually see something like this happen in like the 90s. Or something setting that's quite polished, because I think that time I remember watching stuff on sci-fi that was made in like the mid 90s,
yeah.
And it looks so cheap. And
yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the budget was like. I mean, it doesn't look like there's loads of money put into it, but it doesn't look like a massive hodgepodge job of getting together. There's like a lot of thought put into like how it looks, and it's quite impressive because it has very. You could see it does look like a lot of films from that time period as well, which is quite nice. It might be just the way it's filmed.
It's interesting you say that, though, because two things. One is that they made a very meagre budget go very far, and then they managed to do a lot of tricks. And the second one was, there was, in 94, I think it was, there was a screening of an episode called Dwayne Barry, which is one of the most famous X-Files ever, for reasons you'll see when you get there. And that was screened on a cinema screen in LA, by Chris Carter, and that was the point, and he directed that one and wrote it, and that was the point where he went, this can work as a movie. And from that on, he decided to, he thought that they knew they were making TV that looked much more like a movie. And obviously now, you know, we're at the age now where your biggest and brightest TV shows do look like movies. And they, yeah, they are not seen as the lesser brother anymore. And The X-Files was just coming out of a time where TV was just trash. Even genre was trash to people. Whereas this was proper storytelling. It looked good. And even though they didn't have a lot of money, they made it look good. But yes, they Mulder comments that they're possibly expendable because they're being sent off to the Arctic base to try and figure out what the hell's going on. They get to the airfield, and we get our first few celebrity spots of the episode.
Yeah, I think all of them are. Oh, it's that guy slash girl from
pretty much. So you've got Xander Berkeley, who obviously has been in loads and loads of things.
Oh God, he's loads of stuff.
I mean, he's a great character actor. Yeah. But known probably most for his role as Dixon in 24.
Mason. completely wrong character.
Completely wrong character. Yeah, Xander Berkeley, known as Mason in 24, who was a great character. Only lasted a few seasons, but he was a really, really memorable character. And then, of course, you've got Felicity Huffman, who...
She was the best thing in Desperate Housewives.
Went on to be in Desperate Housewives, which I didn't really watch much of. You've also got Jeff Kobo, who plays Bear, the pilot, and he's... to me, he's the most recognisable from Sons of Anarchy, where he plays the slightly corrupt mayor, doesn't he?
Yeah, I recognise him from... Because he was in Buffy, but he played two different characters in Buffy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he was a guest character for one episode where he played a vampire, who was like a deranged vampire. But he also played as another character called Rack in season 6. Yeah. It was like this warlock who was giving Alison Hannigan's character dark magic. But he was in two different characters. And I've got a question for you, Tony. You might know this.
Are you going to quiz me?
Yes.
Oh, this is exciting.
I've got it written down. Okay. There's another X-Files guest star who has been in Buffy, but as two separate characters. Do you know who?
Oh, dear. There's been a lot of people in...
I did actually spend most of my time watching Ice trying to fact check this, but there is only another actor who guest starred in The X-Files who's also been in Buffy but as two different characters.
Can you give me a clue? Or is there any way to let me know?
He's been in four episodes.
Of which one?
Of Buffy.
Right. Was he in one X-File?
No.
He was in more than one?
Yes.
Oh, goodness me, this is a tricky one.
The characters, he's only been in two-part stories of Buffy. Well, it's a he. I've just given you away, it's a he.
Okay. I was thinking it was a he anyway. Oh.
It's very early on in Buffy, very, very early on.
No. I'm racking my brains, but I don't think I know Buffy well enough. I've seen Buffy, but I don't think I know it well enough.
He was in the pilot of Buffy, two-part pilot of Buffy, and he was also in a two-part episode in season 2 called Surprising Innocence, which is a very big episode in Buffy for
many reasons. It's been a few years since I watched Buffy.
And he was in a lot of makeup. It was a lot more makeup in his second go.
No.
But he was in the pilot. Brian Thompson.
Brian Thompson, who played the alien bounty hunter in the X-Files, who you will get to. Great character. Yeah.
I knew that for ages, but what's interesting, I don't know whether he's a bounty hunter that hunts aliens or whether he's an actual bounty hunter that's an alien.
Ah, well, I won't spoil that. You'll get to that.
I don't know what you stress on during
the
thing.
He's a great character. I won't explain that now. Yeah. Just wait till Colony and Endgame in season 2, which are two of my favourite episodes. I can't wait to do those.
Yeah.
That's a really good trivia question. Yeah, excellent. you foiled me. Everyone will be so happy because normally I'm the one asking the difficult questions. Everyone hates me for it. So, yeah.
Again, I'm going to side now, but I did once question you 10 questions on Pusher, which you say is your favourite episode.
That's true.
And you got so annoyed you only got 4 out of 10.
Yeah, Do we want to get into this again?
No.
Go and listen to the first episode of the Bottle Episode podcast, okay? And you will see why I only got 4 out of 10, okay? Yes. You will understand when you listen to that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, we're still at the... We haven't even got to the base yet. We're still at the airfield. and you've got the other guy. So Xander Berkeley's called Hodge. You've got Felicity Huffman called DeSilva. And you've got Bear is Jeff Colbert. And then you've got another character called Danny who listens to old sports games on tape, which I think is a really weird hobby.
Yes. Like, I mean, would you listen to old Aston Villa games? Are you that depressed?
It'd kill me off, I think.
Yes.
Exactly. It's the equivalent. It is the equivalent of us taping football matches, not, you know, soccer for American listeners, and listening to them back. It's just, that's very strange.
It is.
I don't know if that's a regular American thing people do, or just a little affectation that they threw in. I think it's because Morgan and Wong are big baseball fans, big football fans, and I think they try and get little things in when they can. Like,
but
that.
What I think what it was for, and it's quite, and it's to do with the writing, is that you've got these, it's what's quite a wide cast of guest characters, and I think in that small space of time, you've managed to get four characters that the audience aren't familiar with, and given them quite unique characteristics. It's stock characteristics, but it's unique ones to Lee Pay. You've got the kind of the annoyed whatever Hodges. So he's like annoyed.
Well, he's suspicious, isn't he, as well? Yes. Like, he asks them for their ID and stuff like that.
Yeah. At one point, he actually asks them, I've got it written down somewhere, we need to see if we are who we say we are.
And yes.
That's a line of dialogue from Hodge, which is, I didn't notice the first time, but I only noticed it the second time where he actually says that, which is pretty much quoting the video from earlier.
Yeah, exactly. It's the suggestion that this could happen to them, and they have this grit, which it nearly does, but we'll get there. You've got them with those, like you say, those effective, you know, character stereotypes. But what's good about the episode, it doesn't waste time getting to the base. You know, you just they've got that one establishing scene of all these characters, and we're at the base, and they're immediately, there's dead bodies everywhere, they're investigating, seeing the devastation, and it doesn't waste any time just getting you into it there.
And I think it does also get you into that uncomfortable section where I actually wrote down that if Mulder and Scully aren't in suits and overcoats, that Mulder's not wearing a tie. I mean, Gillian Anderson's pretty much got her hair all up, and he's like got like a check shirt on, a really warm check shirt, and it's unfamiliar, and you haven't really seen them both like that. They're kind of like dressed down, and it's out their comfort zone. It's probably out the show's comfort zone at the moment as well, where it's a nice visual hint.
Yeah.
It's different to what you're going to be seeing for the last seven episodes.
Well, this is it, and it does that, and that's one of its strengths, really. You know, and it just gets them to the point where they're investigating, they're starting to put these pieces together a little bit as best they can at the beginning. And you've got the dog, which is still alive, which you saw at the very in the teaser just, you know, appear. And you get the really creepy first moment where they see the parasite underneath the dog's. It just makes you feel
it's quite unsettling, which is quite weird. It's quite weird. I really like it because I'm not much a horror fan, and body horror freaks me the hell out. There's a shot when we get to it, I couldn't watch. I remember actually looking away when it happened.
I think I know the one you mean, probably. Mm-hmm. But so obviously the dog goes mad at this point before we see the parasite, and he bites Bear. And it possibly bites Mulder. So there's Mulder says he's fine, but there's a little bit of it nearly bit Mulder. Mm-hmm. So obviously you've got a few things being set up there. And then Bear sees that he's got these black nodules underneath
the black spot.
Underneath the black. I have to say, there's a lot of instances in this episode where Scully says nodules. She seems to enjoy saying that. It is a fun word.
Love saying the word nodules. It's like Father Ted. I love saying the word mass. I love saying the word modules.
I love nodules.
Scully, you've gone Irish.
Nodules is a great word.
I love saying the word modules, Father.
Oh, you said modules then, not nodules.
I said nodules.
You can tell you work in a school.
Yeah.
Modules. Nodules is a fun word. So try it at home, guys. It's nice.
Nodules. That's our word of the week. The X-Cast word of the week. X-Cast word of the week. If you can use it in a sentence.
But yes, you've got Bear seemingly infected by whatever's going on. And then you've got lots of little clues. You know, Mulder's finding a piece of paper with the "we not who we are" sentence. You've got Denny, the geologist, who basically starts putting the pieces together about this meteorite that crashed, and that this is the point that suggests that there's an alien, you know, thing behind whatever's going on, which isn't something that's directly necessarily referenced. And it's You know, anyone who's watched The X-Files will know that this doesn't tie into the mythology, mm-hmm. As it were. Although it could if you try and retrofit it, but we'll get to that later. But like, you've got a potential alien reason.
I mean, probably get to later. I'm not 100% sure it was alien anyway. But I do quite like how Mulder suddenly leaps to the alien explanation, because something I've noticed in the first few seasons, well, the first episodes I've been watching in the first season, is there's a nice, I say nice, it's a nice quirk where Mulder seems to jump to aliens no matter what.
Yeah.
So I noticed it in Eve where he's pretty much betting Scully that I bet you that this happens because it's something that happens in abductions and then it's nothing to do with aliens.
Yeah.
And I quite like how he's kind of proven wrong quite a few times because he automatically assumes everything is aliens.
Well, this is it. Yeah. It's part of his makeup in that that's what he just thinks. And that's what he immediately goes for. But you've got what I think I like about this episode, you know, is they're putting all these things together. I think I like the fact that there's a lot of science in this episode. You know, there are certain episodes, yes, of X-Files that are, yeah, very procedural and, you know, they go from A to B and you get Mulder's theory and Scully's theory, but there's a lot of procedural. This has a lot of science.
There's less fiction in terms of this, less fiction, yeah, than there is. No, yeah, there's less fiction and more science possibly.
Yeah, in many respects, yeah, and it's much more of a psychological thing, and mm-hmm. you've got the alien MacGuffin or what the MacGuffin or whatever it is, but like you've got a lot of scientists in a room trying to work something out, and that's more at the beginning before they all start to lose it, really. But that's what it does. It starts off very well that there are a bunch of rational people who've come to find out what's gone on with this former team. They're starting to test blood. They're starting to talk about, you know, why this happened to the dog and all this kind of thing, and then you've got Bear, who is physically unwell, and he's, you know, we know that he's infected and something's going on. And that's a great scene because it starts up very scientific and it builds to the point where Bear basically uses the memorable line, "I'm not dropping my cargo for anyone."
Yes.
I like that line. It's a bit cheesy, but it's like, he is a bit of a cheesy character, really, but he works in the sense of, you know, of what he does. And you've got the whole, they're starting to realise that there is an organism here that could get out and infect the population. And that's very, very clear very early on, you know. So they need to restrain Bear and they need to figure out what's going on. And then it kind of kicks off, really. And I noticed how Scully tackles Bear.
Yeah,
it's like she's quick and strong.
It's like, exactly, yeah.
Just takes this guy down like straight away, bush. But then we get is this the scene that you were that freaks you out where Bear dies?
No,
with the, you know, it's not. This is the one that always gets me, where they have to pull the parasite out of him, you know, and he's there going, and they just pull this thing out of his back. I just think that's really icky, but it's good, and the way it just spurts out like black blood as it comes out, it's really quite ugh.
It's icky. It's not the one I was able to sit down and watch it, but yeah, it's still a bit icky, and it's a bit, because it's body horror. I mean, that's probably the reason I haven't watched The Fly, because
it's a shame, because it's a good film. But you know, this is the point where it's all starting to build now. Bear's dead. There's this weird worm. Mulder gets on the radio and they can't fly anywhere because the weather's turned.
Do you know who the voice on the radio is? Because I was convinced it was Gillian Anderson trying to put an accent on.
I don't, actually.
I thought it was Gillian Anderson going like, "I'm sorry, we are, the person you're trying to call is not available," or something like that. I just thought it sounded a lot like Gillian Anderson putting on a silly voice.
It might be. I really don't know the answer to that, really.
It probably isn't, but I think the show could probably afford. It was probably someone on the production crew or something.
Well, maybe more than likely, because it wasn't a character as such, was it? It was just mm-hmm. a name.
It was the work experience girl.
Well, yeah,
yeah, the one, someone who does the tea. He says, "Hey, yeah, just come here for a second. Say these lines. Thank you."
So, Bear's dead. It's all growing increasingly tense.
Yeah. Oh dear, the pilot's gone first.
No, exactly. Yeah, your pilot's gone. You can't fly out. The weather's, everything's sort of building up against them, really, in terms of, you know, what's happening. But then they're starting to make the connection that the worm is creating sort of violent, irrational behaviour, and you start to get different points of view. In that, Hodge is on one side of things, and Mulder's on the other, and immediately you've got tension building. They're all, as Scully says, they're all wired. and hypersensitive, and things are starting to build.
Yes,
really.
Yes.
To the point where you get the great debate between Mulder and Scully, which really speaks to their alternate viewpoints, where he's shouting at her, going, "This is obviously extraterrestrial, you know, there's in a meteor and all this," and she's going, "No, no, you know, not necessarily." And I think that's great. It's a great conversation.
And also what I found interesting as well was just it's a lot more animated than what they usually are.
Well,
I mean,
exactly,
usually they're more jokingly throwing things in and out, where they kind of respect each other's viewpoints.
Yeah.
Because they know how it works. But here, I think the stress of the situation and the isolation actually sends them shouting at each other. And it's like the first time you see them properly having a go at each other, trying to argue their viewpoints. Mainly, and that's, I really liked how that was so different to the 7 episodes you've seen before, because you know it's quite a tense. It's very tense, and they know they're like, "Oh shit, we're screwed."
Yeah, exactly.
And I quite like how they did that.
It's amping up the tension. One thing this does really well is it amps up the tension between the characters and starts to dial up Mulder, like you said, dial up Mulder and Scully in how they would normally react and how they would normally converse because of what's going on, because of the pressure cooker they're under, because of everything else. What I really like, though, is the way it cuts away from their argument, because that's an unusual trick, in that it goes then to, you know, Hodge and De Silva and their... And Denny and they're starting to go, "Oh, what? I wonder what they're arguing about." You know, and it amps up that, continues to brew up the suspicion between them.
I quite like how you got a mirror between Mulder and Scully with Hodge and De Silva. So you got their own kind of duo. You get the suggestion, I don't think it's ever confirmed, but I'm assuming these two have worked together before, so they know each other, kind of like how Mulder and Scully know each other.
Well, I got the impression that they were at the very least research kind of partners or whatever, mm-hmm. at most possibly a couple, you know, I've always thought that they might be involved, really.
Okay.
So I don't think the episode confirms that but that's the suggestion.
I think they are familiar with each other anyway.
Yeah,
I've got the impression that they've known each other for years. They've known each other for longer than Mulder and Scully have.
Yeah, because Mulder and Scully are only at the beginning, really, of their...
Yeah.
...of knowing each other. It's only been a few months, so... Mm-hmm. This is the thing, they're still getting into each other's groove. So this is the first episode that really gets them to a point of massive conflict and just builds that up. And obviously you've got a lot of tension as everyone's starting to think, well, you know, did the blood get on Scully? Did the blood get on Mulder from Bear? Everyone's on edge. Scully gets a bit ratty with Hodge and fear's starting to run through them, and they all end up going to bed. They all need to go to bed, you know, get some sleep,
Before that, they actually, they strip off first, and they've got to check each other before they go to sleep.
Oh, yeah, this delivers one of the best one-liners that Mulder ever has.
I think I've got it written down.
Where he says, go on.
"Before anyone passes judgment, may I remind you, we are in the Arctic."
Yeah, as they're stripping off.
It's that kind of humour. I mean, that's that kind of... Yeah. The humour I was on about before.
Now, I would argue that that's possibly, not to take anything away from Morgan and Wong, but I think that's Duchovny. I think that's David Duchovny throwing that in there. Or he said something offhand, or he maybe even ad-libbed.
Is there been a history of Duchovny ad-libbing a few of Mulder's lines?
I don't know about ad-libbing. He certainly writes a few episodes later on, or he co-writes a few episodes. So he's late, much later in the show's run, really. But I think he was... if not ad-libbing, I think he was involved in throwing lines in there relatively early on when he got a handle on how to play Mulder and things like that. So I don't know about that one, but it wouldn't surprise me, really. It's just a brilliant line. It's just brilliant.
It's great.
And it adds a nice bit of levity into a very, very dark and serious and tense episode. But yeah, this is the point where they're all asleep. Mulder gets up, seems to have had a nightmare.
And before that again, is that I quite like how you cut back to some of the characters, like where you've got Heiter's character, whose name I've suddenly forgotten, listening to his plays on tape. A great, great little moment where Scully pulls the desk in front of the door.
And yes, that's true.
Sits him with her and like hugs her own legs and she looks really scared.
Which isn't like Scully, because she's rational and she doesn't normally react that way. She wouldn't normally react in that suspicious, paranoid way, especially when Mulder's around.
I think she's mainly been quite sure of the scientific rationale between a lot of the cases. This is something that she can't fully understand just yet, so she's unaware about what's going on.
Mm.
I think it's something that happens throughout the episode, is that the more she understands how the worms work, the less scared she becomes. But
yeah,
particularly near the end of the episode, anyway. But yeah, I really like that scene. It's a nice revealing character moment.
Yeah,
that it's particularly of her where she's like look genuinely scared. And all credit to Anderson for
she does that well. She does, and they you know they both play this well in various different ways. But yeah, we do then get to the point where Denny's dead. He's been found, fallen out of the freezer unit, throat having been cut. Somebody killed him. It looks for all that Mulder might have done it, and we don't know he hasn't at this point. You know, he wakes up and we don't necessarily, we're with him. We don't see him acting suspiciously, but we don't know that he hasn't done it. But then everyone else, it looks like he's banged to rights, really. And then we get to this really, really tense conflict scene. This is the bit where Mulder and Scully pull guns on each other, which is just...
This is my favourite moment so far, the one I wouldn't mention earlier. Because I remember texting you saying, bloody hell, this is good.
Yeah. Where their guns are on each other and she's saying, put it down. And he's like, you put it down first. You know, and they're really, you really think, shit, they're actually going to shoot each other at this point.
Yeah, but it's just magnetic.
Yeah.
I actually watched it. I as soon as the scene ended, I actually paused it to text you. It's just a brilliant moment, and the same reaction when I was watching it earlier, just before we started recording, is that it's still a brilliant scene. It's probably one of the best scenes of TV I've seen in ages, particularly that earlier on in the show when these characters are still getting to know each other.
Yeah,
it's just a brilliant. Both of Anderson and Duchovny do brilliant stuff in that.
They
and
nail
it's
it.
It's just so tense.
It is. They really nail it there, and it gets you to that point where. When you think your two lead characters might shoot each other, that shows you're doing something right. And then obviously, you know, they lock Mulder away, and he delivers that. Duchovny delivers that line where he says, "I'll be safer in here than you will be."
Yeah. I'm safer in here than you.
That's it. And it's like there's a creepiness about him there, and that you think, shit, is Mulder actually is he infected? You know, and it does let you ask that question, even though the answer's likely no. It does lead you to. To answer that question, I think if there's one bit that I think was slightly forced in terms of tension, it's the bit where Scully tries to check DeSilva for the worm, because she kind of just creeps up on her, you know, and leans over, and then she wakes up, and it's just a little bit like, I felt that was a little bit comic. It didn't quite work, you know, the way she holds the bullets up then when you know she holds them up. She walks out through the lab. I just find that quite funny. Just the way she does it. She's like, check me out with my bullets. Don't get in the way. I'm walking.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I'll point out where I think it's when Mulder finds him is how the delivery, that Mulder's delivery goes, Murphy. Is it Murphy?
Yeah.
Murphy's dead. It's just the way he actually delivers that was actually quite weird. I think the line reading was slightly off.
Yeah. Well, that might be intentional, though. You see, that's the point. There's a few attempts, I think, to actually make Mulder not sound not like Mulder. I mean, there's a scene soon where Scully goes and questions Mulder, and he plays it like he really does play it like he could be infected and he could be lying. And I think that was a direct thing in the writing and the direction to say, let's keep this a little bit ambiguous because, you know, you might be. And I think Duchovny does that well. So that could have been intentional, maybe. You can interpret that either way, I guess.
Yeah.
But you've got the whole idea of, you know, is he going to get out of this alive? Because Hodge is now talking about, you know, potentially leaving him here and not letting him leave if he's infected.
Mm-hmm.
Scully's there saying, you know, we need to help him.
I quite like that she still has Mulder's best interests at heart as well.
Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting, actually, how the answer to the whole thing turns out to be from a mistake, which is... when DeSilva messes up, or seemingly messes up the infected blood sample when she's testing it, and she puts it on the other one. It reminded me of the story of how penicillin was discovered, which is because it was somebody who had left, I think a scientist, I can't remember all the details, but I think his maid had left a petri dish on the side, and when she should have cleaned it away, or something food-based. And in the end, whatever was on it, the scientists discovered... penicillin from it. I think it was a pure mistake or you know, some carelessness. It just reminded me of how something really important can be found through somebody messing up, essentially. And while they're furiously yelling at each other, and that's again, which something which makes me think that there's a there's more between them, because she says, you know, I'm not your assistant and all this kind of thing. And she's shouting at him and he's saying, bloody hell, you've messed it up. It just struck me as if he treats her like shit all the time and they're really, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think what they've done is that they kind of tried too hard to try and get the audience to think, yeah, Hodges is the one who's been infected. He's a bit of an arsehole.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gone really arsehole-y, for a better lack of a better term.
Yeah.
He's gone total arsehole. Maximum arsehole.
A new thriller coming.
Yes. Maximum arsehole. Starring Jason Statham.
Jason Statham. You're right. You're absolutely right. And it's trying to lead you down certain alleys, whether it's Hardy or it's Mulder, and you know, and then you've got Scully realizing that the way to kill these things is to put them together. So they basically duke it out in some sort of alien parasite death match.
Yeah, like Celebrity Deathmatch, but with parasites.
Yeah. Obviously, they test it on the dog, ultimately, which was infected. And that poor dog, the way he goes through that, he's just, you know.
That's the bit. It's just the worm going in the ear. I just couldn't watch it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's like...
Even though it's quite a CGI effect. You see, it's one of the few CGI effects that you get on the show, actually, early on. But yeah, I know what you mean. It is a bit icky, but it does the job.
It's for lack of a better term. But I quite like that as an answer, the fact that this species kind of hate each other so much they have to kill each other too.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting thing in that there's some sort of natural repellent between them, which is, you know, suggested at. But then obviously you've got the whole thing of Scully basically saying, if you're infected, you know, tell me because I've got a way to sort this out. And he says, yeah, but if you put that in me, you're going to infect me. But this is where, like I said, Duchovny plays it well, because we don't know at this point. We don't know. And that's when you get, you know, when they check each other for the parasite, I think there's a great bit of quite rough sexual tension, because the way he kind of pulls down the back of her top, there's just something about that scene that's just sexual in a dark way, and I think it's interesting.
There's a line that I pointed out where she goes, I want to trust you, and considering I watched EBE yesterday, there's actually a moment where Scully actually says to Mulder that the only person I currently trust is you at the moment.
Yeah.
Is you, and it's quite interesting how that's changed in like what 11 episodes, no, 9 episodes.
Yeah,
how they've gone from not knowing each other to the point where the events of EBE means they're pretty much the only people they can trust is themselves.
Yeah,
and I quite like to think that perhaps that this episode starts that different layer of trust by the end of it, and I think it kind of starts from here. So because I think when the first started, I think Mulder's quite wary about the fact that she's spying on him, reporting back. And to be fair, she still is reporting after this episode. But I think the change in terms of her having an assignment to try and debunk him kind of changed. And I think this is perhaps an accidental continuity where this is like the episode where the dynamic kind of shifts.
Yeah.
Or if not deliberately, then perhaps the writers or the writing staff kind of start building on that trust rather than the initial distrust in the pilot.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
No, absolutely, yeah. And it is episodes like this and experiences like this that do bond them together. You're absolutely right. You know, the show doesn't have to mention them directly again, but they are all part of a cumulative experience. You know, it's Scully. The whole point is that Scully's getting more sucked into all this world that Mulder lives in, and she's seeing more things that she can't quantify, and he's drawn more to him. And it's episodes like this that where they're really at the brink of death that, you know, do that. And that happens a lot in the first few seasons, well, throughout the entire show, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so obviously this is the point where we build to the conclusion. Mulder and Scully are pretty sure that it's not them, so they then go and find out what's, you know, going on with Hodgins de Silva, and it seems like they've teamed up to do this, and they try and, you know, they lock Scully away, and they're determined. Yeah, and they're determined to prove that it is Mulder by infecting him. Well, de Silva is, and then obviously we find out it's her. She's got the parasite. And then Hodge goes, shit, it's her, do it.
I do quite like the fact, to use another wrestling term, the face turn that suddenly Hodge does.
Yeah.
Where he suddenly goes, it's her, and then pretty much pulls Mulder away from her.
Yeah, it's good, because it proves that even though he's a dick, ultimately he has just
wanted... He's a logical
one. Yeah, and he's just wanted to solve this, you know, and, mm-hmm. and to get to the bottom of it and get them out of there alive. So it's a good moment for his character, because it just proves that he's just a bit of an arse, but his intentions are right. And then, you know, luckily they managed to put the worm, the other worm, in from the dog, in the silver and sort it. And this is it. They get out of there alive, just about, and end up back on the at the airfield.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the final little moment of Mulder discovering that his intended return trip isn't going to happen, because the government or whoever have torched the place, which suggests that little hint of conspiracy, which you do get in a lot of these episodes.
Yeah, that... definitely. There's always that bit, especially in episodes where you would see one. It's like the one with the Amish-type community, where it suddenly that community vanishes a little later on. Where
gender bender.
Like, yes. It's that kind of like last minute, oh, this happened.
Mm.
The government have suddenly covered this bit up. So, and it's nice, there's, I think, a nice little line that Xander Berkeley has, where it goes, you ought to know, they're your people. Which, nice little jab just to...
Well, I thought that, and I thought, you really don't know Mulder at all, mate, do you?
Yeah.
Because it's like, they're really not his
maximum
people.
Dickhead.
Yeah. But yeah, it is, you know, you could draw some links to the conspiracy. If you wanted, you know, there is a possibility this alien parasite is connected to what ultimately turns out to be, without going into too many spoilers for you, Matt, the alien virus and things like that, which you'll discover later. But it's a big leap. So
there are terms that I kind of know of. I know certain words and terms, like something to do with black oil.
Yes, the black oil, which is.
I don't know specifics, but.
Well, I won't say any more, but you could draw, you know, you could suggest that the syndicate are behind the torching of the... But there's, you know, it's all very... There's nothing to suggest that directly.
The syndicate? Who are the syndicate, Tony?
Wait till you get there.
Are you telling me that a 90s video game called Syndicate was responsible for this?
Say no more. But you get the great final line then of Scully saying, you know, and he says he's down there, 250 million years in the ice. And she just says, leave it there. And I can't blame her. You know, it's like, I'd be like, yeah.
Because, you know, sod it.
Yeah, basically, yes, yeah, sod it. I'm not going through that again, Mulder. Yeah. It's just no chance.
Yeah, sod it. You've got a sister to find. Let's go.
Yeah, let's get on with it.
Mulder, pub. Pub.
That would be good, wouldn't it? Pub, and just cut to them in the Winchester, down in a pint. There we go. They get out of it alive just at the last minute. So, that's ice. So thanks for that, Matt. That was ice. Let's go into the next part of our show, which is where I ask you, do you believe in? And I ask you about the specific paranormal topic of the week.
What, now, worms?
Do you believe in worms?
Yes.
In this case, it's... Good, done. In this case, it's obviously not quite as simple as something like ghosts or whatever. But so I'm just going to ask you simply, Matt, do you believe in alien life? Now, this can be... I've asked about aliens before, but this can be alien life in any form, potentially, it takes, whether it's a parasite or a being or whatever.
I don't believe in intelligent alien life.
Okay.
I am 100% positive that during my lifetime, they will discover perhaps, a form of bacteria or something either like the worms or larva or even plant life. Because I class that as life on other planets. I'm convinced that they will find life on other planets, but perhaps plant life rather than intelligent life.
Well, haven't they found like bacteria, potential like bacteria on Mars? That's
I think there's found
in rivers that used to exist and things
possibly
like
possibly could exist. I think they found the potential to exist, but I don't think they've found it. Because I think it'd be a lot bigger news if they had.
Well, yeah, it would but be, wouldn't
I,
it?
I genuinely do believe that, within my lifetime anyway, that we will find some kind of life, but not as in E.T. or aliens.
Do you think it could be robotic? Because that's something that I've heard a lot about, you know, in science, things I've read and stuff about how And in fact, it does come up in a future X-File in season 3, the idea that if aliens did exist, they would most likely be mechanical in nature. What do you think of that? Cylons, basically.
Probably not, because that would mean that there would be an intelligent life to create them to begin with, in terms of science. I mean, for something mechanical, you have to have
some builder.
Yeah, you have to have an engineer to build something. Mm. Artificial intelligence is based from humans developing algorithms that to determine a sequence of events, and for this program to determine a question or an event by themselves without human input. So, and someone has to, because I nearly studied artificial intelligence at university. I chose to do databases instead.
Oh, but you picked wrong. You could have created Skynet by now. Do you know? Think about it. You could be like an evil Mark Zuckerberg by now.
Yeah, but you know what happens when someone builds Skynet?
Yeah.
I don't want that on my conscience.
you don't want to be Dyson from Terminator. Good point.
I'd rather be Henry Dyson than Mars Dyson.
Yeah, true. Yeah. If you have to pick a Dyson, which again is another podcast coming soon from Black Hole Media.
Pick a Dyson.
But so you believe in like bacterial life and the potential
plant life
or something that will.
Yes.
Of course, that would, if that is something we discover, what does that mean for creation?
That's probably the big question. Means that in about 6 billion years, that intelligent life could exist.
Right. Okay. That's
because this planet started with just bacteria and.
Or did it?
No, it started with like just algae or something. Or.
Or did it? You don't know. Could have been. Man, it could have been a bloke.
Show too much.
That's before we get into the hyper realities and the quasi metaphysics of existence.
Religion.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think you make an interesting point. And who knows, maybe by the time we're old, crotchety men, just coming to the end of recording the X-Cast, because it's going to take me that long. Okay, thanks for that, Matt.
No problem.
Next up is the final part of the show. Everyone's favourite. It's time for the X-Quiz. Five questions and a quote on ice.
I've got a feeling you've been looking forward to quizzing me on the X-Files for some reason.
It's almost like you're suggesting I want revenge. Which I think is outrageous.
I possibly never true. Think you're low enough to be that petty, Tony.
Okay, are you ready for five questions on ice?
Ice, baby, to go.
I'll take that as a yes. Question one. Name the government department who send Richter's original team. And Richter being
the rock department.
Richter being the guy who, one of the guys who kills himself at the very beginning.
Oh.
No idea?
The rock department. I'm going to go with the rock department.
Okay. If that's a department headed by Dwayne, a.k.a. The Rock Johnson, then A, why doesn't it exist? And B, no. The answer's no.
We investigate crimes involving The Rock.
I'd watch that show. I really would. No, it was the AICP. The Arctic Ice Core Project, who are the organisation. So that's a no. When Denny is listening to his football plays on tape, when does Mulder say Fowkes retires?
1987.
Well done. Good. Well done. Excellent. This helps by watching the episode right before. okay, question three.
Yes, Tony.
When Hodge is writing notes on possible infections, what does the note attributed to Mulder say? Because it does linger over this a little bit.
Oh, bloody hell.
It might have taken a freeze frame, admittedly.
This might have been the bit I was looking to see if anyone else other than Brian Thompson appeared in Buffy. paranoid? Something to do with paranoia? Paranoid?
No, that is another one, though. It's attacked by dog.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, but there is more like scientific ones on some of the others. But okay. Yeah. Okay, question four. Name the airfield that the crew leave and return to.
Doolittle.
Doolittle Airfield, well done.
With two O's.
And
I noted that. I actually noted that down just in case.
Good. Well, let's see if you get this one then. Because name the town that Doolittle Airfield is in.
Dome? Gnome?
Oh, Gnome. Yeah. Not Gnome as in little gnome.
N-O-M-E.
Yeah, Nom. Yeah. Nom.
Nom.
Yeah. Nom with an E.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Gnome. Well done. Okay, and this is the quote, right? This is the last one. So, are you ready for the quote? I'm not going to do it in the character's voice. I'm just going to do the quote. So, are you ready?
Okay. Yeah, is it woof?
Well done.
Is
bonus
it the dog?
Point. Oh, I should have done that. That was a missed a trick there. Okay. What the hell are you trying to say?
I said woof. What are you talking about? I'm waiting you to tell me the quote, Tony.
Who? Very good. Who says, what the hell are you trying to say? And to whom do they say it?
Hodge to Scully.
Oh, you are close.
It might have been the other way around.
I'll give you that. Because it's Scully to Hodge. Because this is the point when he's questioning her. And she says, what the hell are you trying to say? As if, you know, and she gets really annoyed. Mulder strolled her back. Well done. Well done. You've done well there. You've got 4 out of 6.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty good. That puts you on a par with Zach Moore, who got 4 out of 6.
So am I so joint top?
You're joint top right now.
Yeah, take that, Moore. Take that, Zach.
So, yeah, you. Let's see if you can beat it next time around. So well done on the X quiz.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, that brings our examination of ICE to an end. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. It's been great to have you on, Matt.
No, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed waiting to come on here.
Oh, cool. Great. Thank you. You'll be back.
I do hope to check in once again and later down the road with the series just to inform you guys of how I'm getting on.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll be back very soon as well because you're doing the next one with us, episode 9.
Yes.
So before you'll be doing that. There's no getting away from being on Space, okay? Doesn't matter how
can't
many
just
times.
Watch Space instead.
No. How many times you're doing that episode? Because if I have to suffer it, so do you. So before then, where can we find you online?
If I survive a rewatch of Space, you can find me. I run a TV review website, and I will eventually be putting capsule reviews on. By capsule, I mean very small. Episode by episode thoughts on the first season of The X-Files as I go through it. That will probably be in a month or two. But in general, there's reviews of certain of TV episodes. There's reviews of seasons, all to do with TV. It's more of a people talking about TV they quite like or TV they love rather than just trying to flame everything. You can find it on www.bottleepisode.co.uk. We're on Facebook and Twitter under The Bottle Ep, and you can hear my random nonsense on TV sometimes. And if you really want to get to know me, you can find my personal Twitter, which is a bit private, but if I might let you in if I like you.
God, you're good. You're very good. Yeah, it's so nice of you potentially to let people
yes.
in. To your fascinating private Twitter.
Yes, which is basically me muttering about what I'm listening to on the way to work. But yes, which is X and Matt, which isn't X-Files related when you think about
no,
it.
No, it's not. Nobody ever seems to get what it is.
No, yeah, it's not.
It's like, not anymore.
No, it's a reference to a Buffy the Vampire Slayer character,
yeah.
Xander Harris, and my name. Buffy being the TV show that I probably would start a podcast on if I ever did.
We may have to hold you to that, actually. Yeah, one day. But
The Buffcast.
You heard it here first. But yeah, thanks, Matt. Do check out the Bottle episode, guys. It's great. Not just because it's got my X-Files reviews on there as well. It is of the latest season. But no, it's a really good website. And it's not just Matt actually screaming into the void. It's actually quite a few writers who deliver some really good stuff. So definitely check it out. It's great.
Yeah.
You can find us at the X underscore cast on Twitter. We're on Facebook as well. And you can email us at the xfcast@gmail.com if you want to give us any thoughts. Do subscribe to us on iTunes as well. That'd be really great if you can. If you can just you know, click subscribe and follow us on there. That'd be brilliant. You can get all your podcasts to you. And we're part of the Black Hole Media Network, so you can find us at Black Hole Media on Twitter and on Facebook. There's a group for Black Hole Media on Facebook if you want to join it. Lots of fun TV and movie chat on there, and chat about the X-Files. So there's lots of things going on right now, and lots of other podcasts to listen to and all kinds of stuff. So something for everyone, basically. So do give it a try. Once again, a final thank you, Matt, for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. And if anyone does know any information on the X-Files, please let us know. I'd love to try and find more information on it.
Definitely. Keep us posted. But until next time, remember, guys, trust no one.